Okay, well, I see that it's 6 o'clock, so I'm going to go ahead and call the special council meeting to order. Mr. Montero, do you want to take roll call?
Yes. Councilmember Paw?
Here.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Jacobson?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Wes Hafner?
Here.
Councilmember Russell? Councilmember Russell? Councilmember Morrison?
Here.
Councilmember Parks?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Wes Hafner, you have a quorum.
Thank you. As previously noticed, this meeting of the City Council is being conducted by telephone or other electronic means pursuant to Minnesota Statute Section 13D.021. I'm physically present at City Council Chambers along with Councilmember Jacobson. All other council members are participating by telephone or other electronic means. All council members can hear one another and can hear all discussion and testimony. Members of the public can monitor the council work session by calling into the conference call number, which is 1-312-626-6799. The meeting ID is 973-333-97927. After you join, press the pound key when you're asked to enter a participant ID number. Okay, so we'll just go on to general information, which doesn't appear there's any.
Direct hand and coordinate all of.
Sorry, I think I missed somebody or something, maybe.
Mayor Pro Tem Wes Hafner, I believe a council member Russell joined us.
Oh, okay, great. Welcome, council member Russell. We're just going to move on to C1, which is discussion of community and public safety related questions. And I'm turning over to Mr. Strobel.
Yeah, Mayor Pro Tem Wes Hafner, members of council, good evening. This special council meeting has been requested based on the events in, over the last week that have taken place in Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park. So Chief Anderson is here this evening to provide sort of an overview of from a public safety aspect, and I'll be happy to take any questions he might have. And then towards the end, I think that it'd also be good to get into a little bit of a conversation in terms of how the community can be supportive of, in terms of the businesses in Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center and the communities impacted in our city. So with that, I'll turn over to Chief Anderson to kick us off with the overview of public safety. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Strobel. Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, Council Members. Craig Emelson, Chief of Police. I'll just start with a real general overview of what's transpired in just over a week here in both Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center. Not unsimilar to what we saw last May and June, the first couple nights were the most challenging for both Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center because, quite honestly, we became outnumbered quite quickly. So last Sunday night into Monday morning, from the Brooklyn Park perspective, again, was the most challenging. We had a lot of individuals coming into our city in caravans of vehicles coming from all over the metro area. And literally wherever the police were not at, that's where they took advantage of that opportunity to cause damage to some businesses. They also not only caused damage, but also committed burglary at several of those locations. I think after Sunday night, once we got into Monday morning, those numbers got much smaller. All told, we had about 30 to 35 businesses that either sustained damage and or were victimized by burglars and vandals on their property. Once we had enough resources in place, and with the assistance of the curfew, we did get a much, much better handle on it going into the middle of last week. And quite honestly, here in Brooklyn Park, it's been from a protest related activity or looting related activity, it's been very quiet. For Brooklyn Center, same thing. That Sunday night was the most problematic. There was a lot of information and intel that the intent of some of those that were there not to peacefully protest was to create havoc cause damage and potentially burn assets within the City of Brooklyn Center, primarily the Brooklyn Center Police Department. We were over, we were outnumbered that evening as well, to be brutally honest with you. The police chief, former police chief of the City of Brooklyn Center, made the decision to use chemical munitions that evening to disperse the crowd. I will use his words at his press conference that he felt that that was in the best interest of the City of Brooklyn Center. It protected their assets, community members, and their police officers. Quite honestly, after that weekend, we originally only hid the one fence that was protecting the Brooklyn Center Police Department, and that really caused a confrontation between protesters, those that were not there to peacefully protest, and law enforcement. They were hurling bricks and other things at the officers who needed to be that close to the scene to keep anyone from breaching that fence and getting access to the Brooklyn Center Police Department. I believe it was either Wednesday or Thursday, a second fence was erected, which created further space between the officers and the protesters, and quite honestly has been very successful. We've had very limited need to even issue dispersal orders over the last several nights. And quite honestly, last three nights, it's been mainly people that were there to peacefully protest. And they were allowed to exercise their First Amendment rights well beyond 11 o'clock curfew that Brooklyn Center had in place. So that is in a better place. I know I spoke with the acting chief from Brooklyn Center today. Their city is making a significant investment in additional fencing, hopefully within the next day or two, that's even gonna further protect their assets and hopefully provide for the opportunity for us to draw down some of our resources that are in the City of Brooklyn Center, because Hennepin County will be relieving some of their staff that's at Brooklyn Center to go back down into Minneapolis as part of Operation Safety Net. So that's kind of a just real large overarching view of the last 8 days. And with that, I'll certainly stand for any questions that you may have.
Sorry, thank you. I'll just go around and see who's got questions on what. Councilmember Jacobson.
You know, I spent some time this afternoon visiting with a couple of the businesses that were hit this morning over at 3200 Brookdale Drive with the fire. Several businesses in there, small businesses, you know, talking to Tia from top to bottom. Looking at her, you know, looking her in the eye and seeing her say to me that there's probably no coming back from the damage that she has sustained in her business overnight. The office building on 85th and at the end of Edinburgh there, that was hit over the weekend. Do you get the sense that any of this is connected in any way? You know, it's hard because we don't have the answers for our business owners. This is their livelihood. This is their life savings. And they're scared. And to not have any answers for them is difficult right now as a leader in the community.
Yes, I can't necessarily speculate if either of those two incidents are related to protest-like activity or spillover from the activity in Brooklyn Center. Obviously, the most troubling was the incident that happened last night at Xerxes and Brookdale Drive. I do know that we have the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. They've been here since this morning to investigate that matter. I've not yet been briefed on how that investigation is going. I will say that those that are out to commit criminal activity are taking advantage of the situation. They clearly know that all of us have committed resources to help the city of Brooklyn Center. We have that mobile field force established. So we had 14 officers working 12-hour shifts the first four nights of that incident, and they were all deployed outside of this city. And we did backfill that. We did an all call and called in all available police officers to work that Sunday and Monday. So our staffing is at a point where I believe we can clearly respond well to incidents, but whether those are tied to that type of behavior, I think in one form or another, I think the answer to that would be yes. As we go towards the verdict, I shared with the council, you know, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks ago, that we do have, I believe, a very good plan in place. And there's a lot of resources that have been put together outside of the city of Minneapolis. And a lot of those resources will be operating out of our police station. So aside from our beefed up patrol resources, we're gonna have additional resources, which really are police officers from outside of Brooklyn Park. The other encouraging note I heard this morning was that we did reach out, the state of Minnesota reached out to our some other states to see if they were willing to provide either law enforcement personnel or National Guard personnel. As we speak, I believe I heard there were about 130 troopers from Ohio and Nebraska arriving into Minnesota. They will be able to relieve state troopers at the state capitol to take over that work. I think we're going to have 130 state troopers that will be allowed to be freed up to assist not only in Minneapolis, but here as well. And we've had this constant agreement between the suburbs and the city of Minneapolis is that if it's all quiet in Minneapolis and we have a lot of issues here, we can draw upon National Guard resources and State Patrol resources, just like we did in Brooklyn Center. All those folks you see down at Brooklyn Center PD were all dedicated to Minneapolis at one point. So we have this working arrangement that should we need additional resources, they're available.
I know we don't have much time, so I'll let other council people speak.
Councilmember Pat.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. And thank you to Chief Evelson for your update. I appreciate that. You know, this last week has been a little bit crazy, you know, for all of us, and especially it was very tough for Chief Evelson and for Mrs. Strobel, because they were really the ones that were up late at night making sure that our city is safe. So I first want to thank both of you and your entire staff that has been working so hard. I want to recognize that. And then I just want to let you know that this past week I've been out and about in the community talking to residents, talking to business owners, business managers, employees. I've been out to Brooklyn Center, talked to some of the council members there, spoke with some of the residents there, some of our volunteers, and I just want to share with you that there's a lot of community about what we're going to do, the substantial from this incident and also from the George Floyd incident last year. And a part of me, I know the work that we have to do ahead is going to be coming about, but another part of me feel like it's not happening fast enough. And I wonder if the next time is going to be us or another city that will be facing the same thing, and how many incidents will be occurring. This can't be the norm, is what I'm saying. Can't be the norm. And I feel like it's starting to feel like this is the norm. But for those who are most affected, which is primarily our Black Americans, they're the ones who are most in pain right now. And I sympathize with them, because even though I don't know what it's like to be, especially a Black man, I think that they're the most vulnerable to incidents like this. I do sympathize because I do know what it's like to be a person of color and sometimes to feel like being racially profiled or biased. There's bias against me or discrimination in all of our systems. And so I'm just sharing with you guys what I'm hearing out in the as I'm talking to people. And I come back after talking to community members and I sit down, I try to reflect about what can we do. And I think I have some ideas, but I would love to sit down with all of you, kind of go over some things, some ideas, and see what your thoughts are too at a different time. Because I think we need to sit down and really look at the issues. But I do just want to say that I'm happy that nothing happened in our city as far as a big protest that we saw in Brooklyn Center. But I don't know if that's something that couldn't happen here. And so one of the questions that people have been asking me, and I know that I've already asked Mrs. Strobel and Chief Ellison, but I'd like for you guys just to talk about it just so that our public also knows what our procedure is. Like if a protest should happen here, how do we activate so that we can keep our community safe? Who comes to our aid? And then also who's in command of that that public safety or that force? If you can just talk a little bit about that, I think that would be appreciated.
Certainly. So Councilmember Rapaport, we all rely on what's called, you're all aware of, it's called mutual aid. And ultimately, the requesting agency, so specific to your question, if something were to occur in Brooklyn Park and we did not have the resources to deal with it and we requested mutual aid, whether that's from the State Patrol or other municipal departments, they come into our city prepared to, especially with the field force, they come prepared to use whatever techniques necessary to carry out whatever those orders might be. And in the end, the decision to disperse a crowd, the decision to make arrests, the decision on what kind of munitions to use ultimately lays with that agency, meaning that would land on me. And that's what occurred in Brooklyn Center that Sunday evening. And that police chief made that decision and stood by the decision. And it became problematic somewhat after that as far as who was in charge. The sheriff kind of took over command of the tactical aspect of what was occurring in Brooklyn Center. But it would be the same for all the agencies. And when we created this mobile field force, we created a policy and we made it very clear amongst ourselves that if you call those resources into that city, you have to make those decisions because you know what your community's willing to accept, willing to tolerate, willing to understand. So therefore you have to make those decisions. And if you make a request and you make some decisions that are not in the best interest of the immediacy of the situation, meaning the police and the people that are right there, it's possible that your mutual aid partners will choose to leave because they feel that you're not making the decisions that affords them the opportunity to do their job safely. So I hope that answers your question.
That does. And then another question I got from people, residents asking me, and I thought I'd ask you is, body cam. I know all of our police officers have body cams. What if an incident should occur and they someone who is part of that, who is party to that video, can request the footages from that video untampered, uncut, but how long does it take for us to turn that video footage over to the requester?
Councilmember Rapaport, would depend upon what kind of footage they're looking for. If it was footage related to a criminal investigation, that could take some time. That could take till ultimately the end of the criminal investigation. If it's not a criminal investigation, we can literally turn that video around pretty quickly unless we have to redact images of individuals that have not given their consent for that video to be released. So that could be the only time-consuming feature. The chief of Brooklyn Center chose to release a segment of the body worn camera from the incident that occurred last Sunday. And if you recall his press conference, he did that against the advice of the investigating agency. So the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension investigates all of these matters. to determine whether or not a crime has been committed. And they, I would be the same way if it was my criminal investigation. I would not want that video out that quickly because it could potentially taint witnesses or scare witnesses away from even participating in the investigation. So the question that you have to ask yourself is there's a stipulation in the data practices that says you can release active criminal data, meaning body-worn camera, if you believe it will help quell civil unrest. And that's what Chief Gannon chose to do, believing that was in the best interest of his city, was for their residents to see what had occurred. So it's complicated as far as what kind of video it is and how quickly you can turn it around. But if it's not criminal investigation, it can be a very quick turnaround.
Okay. Do we have like a specific policy on that, or is it case by case?
Who has access to it is governed by state law. So if it's not a criminal investigation, it's public data. You can get a copy of it. If it is a criminal investigation, then it's either private or confidential data, and it all falls under the rules of the data practices rules.
When you say public data, but does that mean that only the people who are party to that particular video can access? So let's say, for example, the police came to my house, knocked on the door, because we called and say, we needed the police's help. Can anybody request for that video? Is it just those who are part to that video can request it?
Those that are subject to the video.
Okay.
When the law originally passed, that was one of the huge concerns from the community, was exactly that I could just go to the police department and ask for copies of all the body worn camera video from last night and have access to it. So shortly after body cameras became pretty commonplace, the legislature did make that change to say it's only for those that are actively on or involved in the video, if that makes sense. And then if that individual wants to go put it on YouTube or whatever they want to do with it, they certainly can.
And then another big question I kept getting over and over again is tasers, right? Because this whole incident was about the taser versus the gun. She thought she was grabbing the taser. Do you know if there are other tasers on the market that does not look like a gun, does not feel like a gun, look like a gun, and kind of operate the same as a gun, and what we do or don't? And I'm assuming we have the kind of taser that looks kind of like a gun.
Yeah, Councilmember Potter, the best of my knowledge, that marketplace has kind of been cornered by their company. Used to be actually called Taser. It's now Axon, AXON. They do have the best technology related to those devices. So what you did see, There's two things law enforcement has done to try to keep that from occurring. And this was not the first time that that has occurred across the country, that a weapon was discharged in place of a taser, and the officer later said they thought it was a taser, is where we carry it. It's always on your weak side, so you have to go all the way across your body to take that out of its holster, so that it's not the muscle memory of drawing your weapon. It's kind of an awkward move to obtain it. And then they've made the frames, and I believe the one in Brooklyn Center is like a bright yellow. So when you pull that taser out and you're looking at it, or you're actually pointing it, you would see that the frame is like a bright yellow, which should hopefully trigger in your brain that you have your taser instead of your firearm. So those are the two things that law enforcement has done to try to keep something like that from occurring.
Yeah, I'd like for us to just kind of look into what other options or trainings or modifications possibly to prevent something like that happening to maybe one of our officers, where they're pulling the wrong equipment in use, and they think that they're pulling out their taser, but it's really a gun. And I don't know what the answer is. I'm just thinking, when people are posing these questions, it makes sense to me. Why doesn't it look different? Why doesn't it feel different? So you automatically know you're holding a taser versus a gun. So that's just something that came up. I'll end my questions there and kind of let other council members speak, but I just want to say in overall that I'm looking forward to doing more of the work that gets to the root causes of the issues of why instances and occurrences like this do happen, and to try and prevent those from happening in our city. And plus, I'm also looking into how can we make sure that our system in place is not a system in which could possibly disproportionately affect certain communities and certain race of communities more so than others. And I think that conversation is something that we can have further down the road, but soon.
Thank you. We'll move on to Councilmember Parks.
Thank you. I don't have any questions. I know that I live within a mile of where the riots and different things are going on, the protests. I think we've gotten a lot better. The first two or three nights I've had, I felt pretty safe because I had a helicopter over my head till 3 o'clock every morning. And so I could hear it all night long. And it kind of brought back memories of my military service time. So it was kind of a sad deal. The other issue, not an issue, but I know the officer that was involved. I've known her and her kids forever through youth hockey. So it's a sad, sad situation for all involved. And I think it's a lose-lose situation for everybody. I appreciate what Brooklyn Park is doing to protect our people. I hope it never happens here. One thing that I've talked to a few people about that is Brooklyn Park is getting blamed for a lot of this. I mean, even in the newspaper, they'll say, well, Brooklyn Park had this. And I was jokingly with Craig and with Jay today, is that maybe we could vote to change the name of our city so we don't sound like Brooklyn Center. Because we're getting blamed for too much stuff. It's always Brooklyn Park. So I appreciate, Chief, what you do, what your people do. I can't imagine being a police officer in these days. And of course, I can't imagine, nor do I know how the black male feels, because I've never had to go through this. So hopefully people will protest peacefully. That's their right to do so. But I don't condone and I don't understand the burning of property or businesses that has nothing to do with the situation. So I can't condone that at all. I just pray for everybody out there, and I just hope it gets better. I think the next couple of weeks is going to be a test. So I appreciate what you do. Thanks.
Thank you. I have Councilmember Russell next.
Yes.
Questions, comments?
Yes. It's been a difficult time for all of us and community as a whole. My question to Craig is, do you have any intel that we can expect some trouble after the announcement of the verdict from the Derek Chauvin trial?
Hey, Councilmember Russell, it'd be tough for me to speculate on that. I know they're in deliberation now. We have had conversations at the Chiefs Association about different responses we believe that would happen based upon different verdicts that come back. The one thing that we are all concerned about is there are quite a few out-of-state agitators in the metro area right now, and we've seen them at Brooklyn Center as early as about Wednesday of last week. And I think those numbers continue to grow. So I believe regardless of the outcome of the verdict, for those that don't live here or don't have a vested interest in the outcome of this trial, there may be individuals that are in the metro area here simply to take advantage of whatever, right? So if the verdict goes one way, potentially they stay in Minneapolis and cause issues. If the verdict potentially goes the other way,
they go outside of Minneapolis to potentially cause issues. So we're planning for all those scenarios around the same time.
So you have all these different protocols and mechanisms that you're putting in place with the hope that nothing happened, but just in case, God forbid, something were to happen, at least you are ready and you're prepared for any possible eventuality. Now, is that the same? So can you talk to us about what kind of protocol and mechanisms you're putting in place to give people the space and the freedom to peacefully protest?
Yeah, Councilmember Russell. So all the planning we have been doing for months was specifically around the verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial. So all that planning has not gone to waste. It just got accelerated. And the Brooklyn Center just kind of threw us all into a little bit of a whack, because if people were intending to do that around the verdict, that's what we had been planning for. So I'm confident to say that the number of businesses that were damaged last Sunday, that would not have occurred if it was strictly related to the verdict in this trial. As far as peaceful protesting is concerned, I wish that it would be covered as well. The people could see the last three nights down in Brooklyn Center have been very peaceful. The folks that were there to cause chaos and cause trouble, I think that distance that we created between the crowd and the police solved that problem, and they couldn't engage the officers. They couldn't throw bricks at the officers. So that tension just naturally went away. And like I said, they peacefully protested the last few nights till midnight, and they didn't see us. They didn't hear from us. We didn't enforce a curfew. We didn't send a dispersal order. Peaceful protests, we are there to help protect that right, 1,000%. And if you talk to the folks that are there, or you saw the community members pulling individuals off the fence on Wednesday and Thursday, they will tell you the same thing. We are here to have our voices heard, but these other individuals keep showing up and ruining it, causing damage, throwing bricks at people, threatening to burn things down, forcing law enforcement to say we need to disperse this crowd for everybody's safety. Short of folks showing up to do that kind of activity, they can have their voice heard into 5 o'clock in the morning. They're never going to hear a thing from us. We'll make sure that the scene is safe for them, and that's it.
So so you're doing parallel. So there's some parallel planning going on. Okay. So that's good to know. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, Councilmember Morrison.
Thank you. I want to add a couple of things here. Councilman Parr asked about some solutions. One thing come to my mind was changing the mindset of how we respond and react, number one, as opposed to thinking about pulling either or a taser and or a weapon to begin to proactively engage that person in the best manner that we possibly can alter the response of us reacting by pulling a weapon, whether or not it's a taser and or it's a firearm. So if we change the way that we're thinking and get back to serving and protecting, we can minimize hopefully some of those mistakes, accidents, and or unfortunate situations just by reprogramming the way we police, number one. Also, I have a chief. I've heard about the troopers arresting journalism that was on the scene. I want to know, what do we have in place to allow them to do their job without arresting journalists who have identified themselves as journalists, all the credentials and everything, and yet they still was aggressively treated and arrested. So I'm concerned about that. What is our plan for that, Chief? Can you share that with me?
I can. Councilmember Morrison, there was actually a emergency restraining order issued by a judge last Friday that prohibited law enforcement from dispersing and or engaging with journalists. I can only speak to what I heard a couple of the nights that I was in the command post related to Brooklyn Center. And the dispersal orders were meant to be helpful. The dispersal orders said that this is an unlawful assembly and that all individuals need to leave the area. And they specifically called out journalists and said, you know, journalists, this is this does affect you as well. Because what you've heard from journalists sometimes is they'll get into a crowd and they can't get out. So we specifically let them know the dispersal orders in place. And the other thing that's important to share is we issue every time in Brooklyn Center, this is common with our field force, we issue 3 dispersal orders once that decision is made. We issue a dispersal order, we wait 15 minutes, we issue another one, we wait 15 minutes, we issue another one. So from the time that decision is made that we need to disperse this crowd, to us even making any attempt to disperse the crowd can take anywhere between 45 minutes and an hour. And at no point have we said that we do not want journalists there. They're there to document and relay what's occurring back to the community. And quite honestly, a couple of those nights, I was dependent upon the journalists so that I could determine what our folks were doing down there. So in no way has there been any attempt to prohibit their activities on the nights that I was aware of what was occurring down there. And the governor just gave a press conference where that question was asked of him, and he's asking that journalists come forward with the issues that they're experiencing, because one of the things we learned last May and June was we didn't clearly identify which agency we were with. We all just were we all wore clothing that just said police on it. So if someone had an issue with someone at a street corner, it was difficult for them to be able to go back and say, a police officer treated me poorly, but I have no idea where that police officer is from. So now in our gear that we're wearing, you can clearly identify it's Brooklyn Park Police, it's State Patrol, it's New Hope, it's Plymouth, it's whoever it might be. So he's asking for them to come forward if they have issues. I'm not aware of any that involved the Brooklyn Park Police or, for that matter, any of the issues down in Brooklyn Center. That doesn't mean something didn't happen. I'm not aware, but at this point, I'm not aware of that.
All right, thank you for that, Chief. So with assurance, if we were in that situation and journalists was present, we have instructions and or orders from the governor as well as from you to make sure that they're allowed to do what they need to do without restrictions or arrest and those things. I just want to see if that's what we're talking about here.
Yes, as well as the court has issued an order that says we're not allowed to engage with the journalists. And I can get a copy of that order and give it to Jay for distribution to you guys if you'd like to take a look at it. It's pretty clean and clear language on what the rules of engagement are related to journalists.
Thank you for that. I would like to see that too. But also, going back to Councilman Paz's question, she asked about the body-worn cameras, and you mentioned that depending on if there's a criminal investigation would determine on if that release of that camera would be extended, unlike if it was a non-criminal investigation. Can you tell me, and I know it's a criminal investigation, but why would we extend that any differently if it's freedom of information for someone to have? Wouldn't that demonstrate that there is no possibility of any tampering with that video footage if we released it in its originality in a short amount of time. Because if we extend it and held on to that video footage, people can suspect, think, and or believe that we altering that video footage, which, you know, that's one of the number one things that people say. So that's nothing new, and I'm sure you've heard that many, many times. But I'm just trying to get clarification on why we couldn't, in a 48-hour turnaround period, release that video footage to those wanted parties that's involved in that, so it won't appear that we are tampering with information, because the evidence of the video footage is still would be the evidence, whether or not it's released 48 hours or 4 weeks from now. It should still be the same authentic video footage that was recorded from the body cams of that police officer. Can you share with me that, please?
Yeah, Councilmember Morris, that is something that would take legislative action, because in law enforcement and get investigative data, not only body-worn camera video, but squad video, police reports, evidence gathered, is all considered investigative data and has all been deemed to be private and cannot be released. Individuals that are subject of that data and subject of that criminal investigation quite frequently will get copy of the video because it's part of the discovery. So if a defense attorney requests copy of that video from the prosecutor, they have to get it. So it's not like individuals that are subject of that crime have to wait until their day in court and never have a chance to see it or and create their defense. They do get it. It might just not be the next day or within 48 hours. It's when legal counsel requests a copy of it, they get a copy of it.
And on a lighter note, I just want to say maybe we should arrest those journalists, especially when they're reporting Brooklyn Park as the wrong person when it's supposed to be Brooklyn Center. They keep writing the wrong story and using the wrong city. So maybe we should just arrest them anyway. And I'm just being a little bit facetious here, but they're giving us the name, and that name, once you put it out in that paper, people, it stick to people's mind, and they continue to associate us as being that particular city that they're referencing, and it's not us. And I don't know if you can really go back to change that, although we're trying to do that, and we lifted our voices to reach out to those entities to let them know that that wasn't us. But it's still been put out there over the millions of papers or hundreds of thousands of papers that they published, as well as internet and those type of things, and it's using our name, unfortunately, but they're using our name. But again, I'm just kidding about the journalist part arresting them. I just wanted to throw that in there as they're using us as a scapegoat. But anyway, thank you guys for what you do, Chief, and praying for your safety and all of the brave men and women that's out there that's stepping up to protect us. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think I'm the last one. So for me, and I know that it may not be everyone's favorite thing, but I'd like it if Chief Envelson, you could just kind of walk through the council through the thought process when we're putting in place a curfew order, and kind of what things, well, like the one night when we couldn't get any confirmation back from another city, so we did what we needed to do. So can you just kind of walk the rest of the council through how we make those decisions?
Mayor Pro Tem Wes Hafner, the first night the governor actually issued a metro-wide curfew that I believe affected the 7-county metro area, and he quickly dialed that back on night number 2. But what we were experiencing here in Brooklyn Park, as Councilmember Parks just alluded to, the Brooklyn Center Police Department is only about 2 blocks from our border. And what we were experiencing is individuals that chose to leave the gathering because of the curfew or even before the curfew were coming into Brooklyn Park to potentially do criminal activities. Then once we did issue dispersal orders, same effect was happening. They were leaving the city of Brooklyn Center and going into the surrounding cities and causing issues. That was one reason for the curfew. The second one, quite honestly, from our perspective, it's almost impossible for me to explain how beneficial those curfews are for us to be able to do our job. And what I mean by that is individuals that are not hell-bent on taking advantage of the opportunity or are simply coming and going from work or all the exceptions that are as part of that curfew, abide by the curfew, which allows us, so when we pull up to Zane and Brooklyn Boulevard, instead of having hundreds, if not thousands of cars there at 10 o'clock at night, literally I was out there that night and it's down to the 20s. And you can easily identify these caravans coming up Brooklyn Boulevard or across 85th that have come into Brooklyn Park to do bad things. And honestly, it's worked like this in every city. The increased visibility will cause individuals to move on. They're simply looking for weaknesses in where law enforcement is and take that opportunity to jump out and cause property damage and commit burglaries. And literally it can take 3 minutes from pulling into leaving. It can happen that quick. So I know it's not popular in the community. I know it puts you guys in a very difficult spot, but I can say from a law enforcement perspective and protecting the businesses and the people of the city, it's a very effective tool.
Will you also just add or talk a little bit about the coordination that we attempt to do with the other surrounding cities about setting a time and that kind of thing?
Yeah, it was difficult on a couple of the nights because I think leadership in Brooklyn Center was getting pulled in so many different directions. We wanted to make sure that we had the same curfew across the suburban agencies. And the reason I say that is there's no better way to confuse your residents than have a different curfew when you cross an intersection. It's nonsensical. I mean, there should be a curfew in place for the impacted areas and the areas that border those areas as well. Because if it's 7 o'clock here, 8 o'clock here, 9 o'clock there, you're not accomplishing what you're trying to accomplish. You're trying to accomplish getting individuals home that have no intent on doing bad things and allowing us to focus on the individuals that are hell-bent on doing bad things. So if you have staggering times, you're not accomplishing what you're trying to accomplish with the curfew. But having said that, at times it's difficult when people are trying to text back and forth and call and they got press conferences and other needs. So it's a challenge.
Great, thank you. I think that was a hard thing for me anyway, because, you know, I'm listening and trusting to the experts, and I think that's important for us to be doing that. It was hard when we couldn't get an answer back so that we could be on the same page with the time. And I think one of the things that I just want to make clear is that in no way, shape, or form are we trying at all to do voter suppression in any way, shape, or form. We actually talked about that. I want to let everyone know that we talked about that and purposely and consciously did 8 o'clock because that's when the polls closed. And as you heard from Chief Envelson, you know, if you're just driving from the poll to home or driving to the poll from home, you were fine. It's those groups of people that they can more easily identify when it's not just a driving back and forth to work kind of situation. So I just want to make sure that all my fellow council members know that we talked about that specifically and had to make a decision and didn't have some data that we needed to do that, but had to make the decision. And in no way, shape, or form we're trying to do any kind of voter suppression with setting that day at 8 o'clock. So there's just some planning and stuff that Chief Envelson talked about needing to be able to do, which is why we picked 8 o'clock. And we didn't get an answer back from, I'm just gonna say it, we didn't get an answer back from Brooklyn Center when we asked the question to like five or six different people. So we had to make a decision and we made one. So I just wanna let people know that those things aren't being done in a vacuum, and that I'm listening and trusting our experts here. So hopefully that makes people feel a little bit better when we have to do the curfews. But we're also trying to be cognizant of the fact that there's going to be potentially more curfews that we need to do when the Chauvin trial's over. And so trying to be thinking about the fact that we don't want to give people kind of curfew wear out either. So it's never fun to do that stuff. So I just want to make sure people know that we weren't trying to do anything specific with them, other than to just protect our people and keep people safe. So I think that's all I have. Mr. Strobel, you have anything that you want to add to that?
Can I ask a question there before you move
forward? Oh, sure. My apologies. I didn't go back around again.
No, that's fine. So what is that coming from? I mean, that sounds sort of preposterous. I mean, we pass or we approve the curfew to suppress the voters? I mean, where is that coming from? I mean,
I'm sorry, I'll let you finish. I'll answer your question when you get finished asking the question. My apologies, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's all right. No worries. Because I personally have a problem with the curfew and what appeared to me like the arbitrary way it was done, at least from my vantage point. I know I may have missed some of the exchanges back and forth and things were moving so fast that I may have missed something. But I did get a lot of angry constituents and others calling. I mean, I sent the information to Craig and I think and Jed one time, but there were a number of folks who didn't like the curfew, especially the ones that we imposed. It may be an effective law enforcement tool, but many of our residents were very happy with that. So that was where my concern lied. And then after I heard from the chief and Jay about the rationale behind why those decisions were made, I was fine with that. But I never did hear and would never think that voter suppression or there's some sort of backroom type cynical deal done to suppress voters. I mean, that sounds like outrageous. I mean, so I don't know where that's coming from. But
yeah, and that was me seeing posts on Facebook about thinking that that's what we were doing. And I was just trying to make it clear that that's not what we were doing in any way, shape, or form. There was no backroom ridiculousness purposely out to try to get people not to get out to vote. We were very cautious about it and very conscientious about it and talked about it and thought about it and had to, do what we thought was the best thing at the time. So I wanted to make sure people knew that specifically that it was not a way to do that. We were not trying.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. I just didn't know the context.
Yep. Mr. Strobel, did you want to add to the conversation?
Sure, Mayor Pro Tem, members of council, just a few things that I wanted to highlight. With regard to Brooklyn Park businesses, as Chief Hendrickson alluded to, there were several businesses that were had property damage, looting took place. Our operations and maintenance staff worked very aggressively the evenings of that first Sunday night and then Monday night to board those up ASAP. We know that helps prevent additional violence from happening or additional looting from happening, and they were all escorted by our police department, so we appreciate that partnership. And in many cases, the business owners that would show up were surprised and very thankful and pleased that we did that. I would also say that our staff, and Ms. Bergerand is here with me this evening as well, has been out working directly with our Brooklyn Park businesses that have been impacted. And want to support those businesses to help get back on their feet. And I just want to take this opportunity to encourage residents to continue to support our local businesses. Over the last year, between COVID, civil unrest, and other things going on, there's just been it's been a hard time for businesses. So any opportunity that we can support our Brooklyn Park businesses, I encourage folks to do that. In addition to that, I will say, we've also, we had a leadership team meeting last Thursday, and one of the things that I asked all of the leadership team to do is to reach out to our colleagues in Brooklyn Center to find out how we can help out with the Brooklyn Center community and the staff that we work very closely with on a variety of fronts, whether that's through business supports or whether that's through community engagement or whether that's through communications, police department, so on. And so we have done that, and we did help out a little bit on Friday with some flyering. I know a number of people have volunteered down there to help out in terms of some of the community supports of meeting the needs of Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park residents of providing some of the basics to get by during this challenging time. So I just wanted to encourage folks, highlight some of the things that we have done in terms of supporting our residents, our Brooklyn Park businesses to help them through this time. And as we talked about earlier in the conversation, some businesses are continuing to be impacted relative to that arson that took place last night. So obviously we don't know what's going to take place once the Chauvin trial is impacted, but we are prepared and ready to support our residents and businesses to help and be as responsible as possible.
And Mr. Strobel, will you also just quickly, I know we're running out of time here before our other meeting has to start, but do you want to just touch quickly on the request that we received from HRC and kind of what the next steps will be for that? I know everybody should have gotten an email with that, but can you just give us some direction about how you want us to move forward with that? I know we were kind of hoping to have a conversation potentially about it here tonight, but we don't really have time for that now.
Yeah, Mayor Pro Tem, Wes Hefner, members of the council. In fact, Chair Asia King, Human Rights Commission Chair, is on this evening, so I don't know if she wanted to say a few brief words. My understanding is that last Thursday evening, the Human Rights Commission met, and they did have a request of the City Council in terms of sending out a letter of support for the community and also acknowledgement relative to our response of if there are peaceful protests, what our approach would be relative to that response to that protest with regard to some of the law enforcement tactics that potentially could be used. Chief Henderson and I did have an opportunity to talk with each of the council members about that today, got some feedback. Ms. Hepala has been involved in crafting a draft response, and that's being fine-tuned, and we're going to get that out to the City Council this evening for your feedback and input, and then hopefully approval, and then we'll get that out to the community tomorrow. But if Ms. King wanted to share anything else, I think that we should take that opportunity.
Yeah, so HRC just wanted to make sure that we were advocating on the rights on the behalf of the citizens. And also, as Chief Evelison reached out to me to also ensure that he wanted to support protesters and help those who are wondering, you know, their stance on being supportive in these hard times. So HRC just wanted to make sure that we were backing what City Council was saying and the initiative of also Brooklyn Center as well, and just show our presence and support for finding peace, keeping peace, and how to push forward within these difficult times. So.
Yeah, we really appreciate that work, and I think we'll be reviewing the draft that was sent and then getting back to you. So, I mean, I don't know if there was any consensus from earlier today or not, but I know we'll be bringing that up again soon. Correct, Mr. Strobel?
Mayor Pro Tem Wes Hefner, members of council, yes, similar to other messages like we've done recently or even last year, we will send a draft out for council's review before getting approval and then distributing that to the community.
Great. Thank you. Well, I think that's all we had on our agenda for this meeting, so I'm going to call the meeting to adjourned so we can move to the next one. Do we want to take a 5-minute break or anything in between? Or
do we sign off of this one and then go back onto a different number? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think we do. So we'll just sign off and then come back in your other meeting. Okay, everybody?
Yep.
All right, super. Thanks.